Chapter 27. Gutra and Hudgens. Hilo pulled his sunglasses off as he sat down in the conference room in the basement of a Raphael's Goodwill barn in Kansas City, one of the original fronts for hiding Ash Angel command and control activities. On the top floor, second-hand clothing and merchandise went to the needy at steeply discounted prices. Underneath, a high-tech operations center. To keep the dreads off the scent, only a handful of the 204 operational stores housed an Ash Angel facility. Normal humans administered the rest. Corinth had arrived earlier, and Hilo fist-bumped him as he settled in. Goldbo and Cassandra walked in together a few minutes later. They looked at ease with each other. Maybe the relationship talk had worked. Corinth eyed them. Boyish face turned down in a frown.
"Hey, Cassie,"
Corinth said, his brightness sounding forced. "Chumpkins," she returned.
"Corinth."
"So, how was the drive, Hilo?" Cassandra asked, taking a seat at the head of the table. Hilo leaned over and shook Goldbo's hand.
"There was a storm in the Midwest. I had to leave the motorcycle and take a bus."
"That sucks. I see you kept the leather jacket." Hilo shrugged.
"I like it."
"Nice work on the Thrall," Goldbo said, sitting down next to Cassandra.
Corinth folded his arms in a way that pushed his biceps out.
"That Dahlia thing, though, totally messed up."
"The Thrall is what got messed up," Goldbo said.
"I know a guy on the burn team. He said most of the Thrall pieces could fit on a hoagie bun. I might have to get some pointers on the sword thing. Sounds like fun."
Cassandra tapped her phone.
"You boys can talk shop later. Let's see what Maggie's got for us."
After a phone call and a few taps on the table, the projector whirred to life, Arcus Magdalene brightening into view. She occupied half the screen, and a map of the Gutra and Hudgens office complex occupied the other. Six Wing, the head of Midwest Operations, joined them. He was thin but toned, the type of body fit for Ironman competitions. His tan face and dark hair were morphed to middle age, as many of the Ash Angel leadership preferred. Six Wing's deliberate and precise way of speech was a slow counterpoint to the rush everyone felt. As the meeting got underway, Hilo appreciated his even temper when emotions ran high. Nothing he said ended in an exclamation point. He was calm, controlled, and in command. Hilo wished he had that gift, especially when he became the target of debate.
"Trace, sorry, Hilo, is compromised," Six Wing complained in his steady tone.
"Send the other three. He can stay here and help coordinate. I know you don't agree, but I'm hoping a seasoned agent like Cassandra will see wisdom." Arcus Magdalene shook her head, but Cassandra jumped in.
"Six Wing, after the last year, it's hard to imagine who isn't compromised. I'll get him morphed into something even you won't recognize."
"But he isn't in the system," Six Wing countered. "The only way Dahlia and the Thrall could have found him was through direct contact with a traitor within the AAO. I wasn't thrilled he was allowed to come here. They might be tracking him right now."
"Not necessarily," Cassandra said.
"Hilo had phone contact and personal contact from several members of the AAO during his time in Phoenix. Any one of them could have led the dredge to him inadvertently, especially if our communications are compromised."
"Let's not forget that the dreads are helping him," Six Wing said. "Why would they do that if they weren't setting him up or using him?"
"Don't exaggerate," Arcus Magdalene admonished. "A single dread has helped him twice, apparently against the wishes of whoever is running the show."
"We can't know it's against anyone's wishes. His personal connection to Gutra and Hudgens makes him..."
"We've been over this," Arcus Magdalene said, sounding exasperated. "Repeating your arguments isn't working. I've made my decision. Can we move on?"
Six Wing folded his arms.
"Yes, Arcus. Please log my objections."
"Very well. Please review the plan we've put in place," Arcus Magdalene said.
Hilo released a fist he'd been clenching. He saw Six Wing's point, but this was Gutra and Hudgens, and like Cassandra had said, it felt like fate or the devil's due. One way or another, he knew he had to go there.
"We've got to get access to their internal computer system," Six Wing droned.
The office protects its sensitive files by not making them accessible to the internet. Even their intranet is run on physical wires rather than wireless routers, meaning we can't hack it just by getting near the building. We've been able to get a good idea of who their current clients are, but their transactions and the movement of money is buried somewhere in their system. The idea here is pretty simple. We need to plant a Wi-Fi transmitter on a computer inside so we can hack the internal network. Sounds simple, but the device has to be registered on one of the machines on the network for us to even have a chance. Even with the connection, it could take weeks to break down encryption and security. Since Hilo has computer experience, he and Cassandra will have the lead. They will pose as an elderly couple trying to protect their recently fabricated estate from greedy kids and greedy government. Hilo needs to find a physical computer on the inside. We suspect they mainly use terminals. They do, Hilo confirmed. He'd noted it on one of his few visits to the place. And terminals won't do, Six Wing continued. The Wi-Fi device has to be plugged into the port of an actual server or desktop machine or someone's laptop. To be honest, we don't know where any might be in the building, so the initial visit might be recon only, unless you know, Hilo. Not really, Hilo admitted. There is a server room in the basement, but you need a key card with access to get into it, and only the IT folks and perhaps some upper management have access to it. This isn't going to be easy. A secondary plan, Six Wing added, is to gain access to a terminal of one of the employees and drill down on one or two of the shell companies we came across. Failing all this, we might have to try impersonation. We're combing their employee records for a likely match. Any on-site intelligence? Cassandra asked. We've done drive-bys every hour for the last 2 days. We have confirmed that Dreads work there. Gutra and Hudgens are both Dreads. But they have wives, Hilo said, remembering the haughty plastic women that accompanied them at the parties. Yes, Six Wing confirmed. Normals, both of them. It's been a shocking development. We've never seen Dreads placed so high in industry, much less a white-collar industry. Ever. There has been a lot more foresight to the Dread activities than we previously imagined. What we thought was a recent, unified uprising has actually been in motion for a number of years. Gutra and Hudgens founded their law firm 5 years ago and have done quite well financially. These two are a far cry from the regular dumb thugs we're accustomed to pounding. Something complex is going on here, and I personally believe we're in more danger than even the blank massacre suggested. That's enough doom and gloom, Arcus Magdalene said, though I think your statement does underscore the importance of this mission. We need to find out where all the funding for vehicles and weapons development comes from. That's somewhere in the bowels of Gutra and Hudgens. The mission starts in 2 days. You ready for this one, Cassie?
Yep.
Hilo's got a sword now, so I think we all feel a little safer, she answered dryly. Six Wing's gaze darted from person to person, face scrunched.
Hilo spent some time with an old master, Corinth explained. He can slice, he can dice, and from what I hear about the Dread Thrall in his apartment, he can mince. The burn crew probably could have used a sauté pan.
Arcus Magdalene grinned and shut off her feed. For a late February day, Springfield was jacket warm weather, a recent week of unusually balmy temperatures having thawed the hilly, tree-blanketed landscape into dull browns and grays. A pleasant sunshine favored them, brightening the white granite building that rose 4 stories into the air. Gutra and Hudgens, attorneys at law. To a normal's eyes, the edifice represented affluence. To Cassandra's Ash Angel team, which had driven past it twice since arriving in Springfield, it was a dark fortress guarding desperately needed secrets and crawling with Dread security. For Hilo, it was a house of pain. His widow and the man she'd cheated on him with awaited inside. Her dark Acura sat in the parking lot. The Scolas confirmed that both Teresa and Simon still worked for the law firm, and thinking of the two of them together wrenched his stomach. He was Hilo. He was free. He would keep reminding himself of that.
You going to be able to handle this, Hilo? Cassandra asked after a long silence.
He hoped he could.
After escaping the thrall, he thought he had turned a corner. Maybe he still sat idling at the intersection. I'm good. It was 10:23 a.m., 7 minutes before their appointment. They sat in an old Mercedes in the parking lot, morphed into pruned 70-year-olds. Since they were supposed to be rich, they dressed the part. Cassandra looked as elegant morphed old as she did morphed young. Hilo felt like a train wreck of speckled skin and floppy ears. They'd agreed not to risk weapons of any sort. Double-checking, Hilo fingered the Wi-Fi network device in his coat pocket, cleverly disguised in a slim pack of mint gum. The dark gray suit Hilo wore dwarfed his emaciated frame, while Cassandra's long black skirt and lacy white shirt looked expensive enough to match her genuine pearls. They were Charles and Amber Honeycutt, married 46 years. Two greedy, squabbling boys were desperate for them to die so they could despoil their estate, if not their very corpses.
"We need to decide something, Hilo," Cassandra said as they prepared to exit the car. "Old couples come in two varieties, sweet and sour. The sweet ones smile a lot and tell lots of funny stories. The sour ones have spent the last 10 years of retirement sitting at home getting on one another's nerves. Which are we?"
"Since we've got no stories and have two children we hate, sour makes sense." Cassandra grinned.
"Okay, just remember you asked for it."
She picked up the comm unit from the console. "Goldbo, Corinth, we're going in. Send good thoughts our way." There wasn't much their team could do to help them. Besides ditching their weapons, they thought it best to go in with nothing that might give them away. No comms, no phones. Hilo stepped out of the car. He shuffled forward 10 paces and turned around. Cassandra wasn't getting out. She sat in the car, gripping an oversized purse that could fell a rhinoceros, and stared daggers out the window. He sighed. Using the old man walk he had tried to perfect the night before, he ambled over and opened the door for her. A gaseous cloud of generously applied perfume wafted out in search of a horse to suffocate.
"Gee, thanks, Chuck," she said with ill-disguised acidity. "You're always such a gentleman."
Hilo hunched a bit and kept his wispy head down as if to scan for tricky cracks and curbs in the parking lot. Cassandra, scowling at the bright sky, walked with a dignified air, despite the forward curvature of her back. They turned the corner onto the sidewalk, finding the expected dread security guard posted at the outside door. He regarded them with bored eyes for a couple of moments, then turned his gaze back to the street.
"He sure looks nice in a uniform," Cassandra said as they walked past him. "It's a shame you didn't decide to serve your country, Chuck, but I guess not everybody's got the stomach for it."
"That's a security guard uniform, you blind old bat," he shot back as she waited for him to open the imprinted glass door for her.
"Well, Chuck, you couldn't even get that job, remember? Because of your drinking problem?"
So that's how she wanted to play it. The white marble tile sparkled in their eyes as the door shut silently behind them. The sumptuously furnished lobby screamed money. Leather couches on purple rugs faced a circular fountain gurgling at the center. Door-sized paintings of Gutra and Hudgens hung on opposite walls. Trace wanted to spray-paint a red aura around their classically portrayed likenesses. A beautiful receptionist with straight brown hair talked on a Bluetooth headset as they approached.
"Drinking problem," Hilo said, wondering how far she would go to insult him.
"It's pretty sad when your drinking problem was so bad you can't even remember you had a drinking problem, honey."
"Well, I wouldn't have had a drinking problem if you wouldn't have been such a whore at my family reunions," he countered.
And Cassandra burst out laughing, barely able to maintain the proper old lady tenor to her guffawing. Hilo grinned as Cassandra latched onto his arm and collected herself. The receptionist watched them, face mirthful, as they approached.
"I always love to see a happy older couple," she said, giving them a look usually reserved for kittens. "Gives me hope I might find the right one someday. How long have you been married?"
46 years, Hilo said proudly.
45, dear," Cassandra disagreed.
"I just wish it was 46, pumpkin," he said, laying on the sap. "I wish it was 100.
Cassandra turned away. He surmised the giggles were threatening to get the better of her.
"Aw,"
the receptionist cooed. "What's the secret to staying together, if you don't mind me asking?" Hilo doubted the receptionist could have found two less qualified people to answer the question.
"Strong medication," Hilo said with a wink.
"Money," Cassandra added. The receptionist laughed. "You two. Well, you must be the Honeycutts for 10:30, right?"
"That's right, miss," Hilo responded.
"Let me take a quick look here. Looks like you're missing some contact information. Do you have a cell phone number or an email address where we can reach you?"
Cassandra snorted. "Chuck's not very good with all these new gizmos you kids have. He wouldn't even touch the microwave for 3 years because he couldn't figure out the keypad."
"I'm not good with the gizmos. You're the one who tried to dry silverware in the thing. Oh, look, honey, it's like the 4th of July in there."
The receptionist laughed again. "Well, that's okay. It looks like we've got a landline, though email makes it easier for us to send you documents electronically. And it says you're here to manage your estate and make some alterations to your will, is that correct?"
"That's right, miss," Hilo responded. "Now that I've been diagnosed with cancer, the vultures are circling the old estate, if you know what I mean."
"I'm so sorry. Do you have... long?"
"Well, it's testicular, and they caught it early. Time I've got. What I won't have are too much information, dear," Cassandra admonished.
"Though it is so... sad."
Honest-to-goodness tears formed in the corner of her eyes. She was so good at this stuff.
"There, there, Amber," Hilo consoled, taking her hand. "This old stallion will be around for a good while now."
The receptionist's eyes actually watered.
"We'll get you taken care of, Mr. and Mrs. Honeycutt. Your estate will be in good hands with Gutra and Hudgens. You'll be with one of our brightest and best junior partners today, a Mr. Simon Powell. He'll see you shortly. Have a seat, and he'll be out to greet you when he's ready."
Hilo felt cold. He made junior partner? Cassandra led him away to a leather couch and sat beside him. When the receptionist wasn't looking, Cassandra punched him in the arm.
"Don't make me laugh like that," she said, lowering her voice to a whisper. "Now are you going to be able to face this guy? This cannot end in a jealous fit of revenge, you got me?"
"Yeah, I get it." Hilo looked at the floor and rubbed his wispy-haired head. Simon Powell. As soon as that face popped into view, he was going to want to shove it through a wall. He set his jaw. This mission was important. They needed to know who was funding the Dreads, and he couldn't screw it up. But he couldn't shake the nagging feeling that the reason this mission had fallen to him had nothing to do with his computer expertise. It had to do with him. With Teresa. With Simon. Cassandra watched him intently as she applied some lipstick. The door next to the receptionist desk opened, and Simon Powell popped out. There he was. Fashion model strut in a gray pinstriped suit. The good looks, the winning smile. He still had the never-changing tan, and now Trace knew why. Simon Powell was a dread. Cassandra applied a crushing squeeze to Hilo's hand, his unbeating heart compressed under the weight of his horror. Thought failed him, his mind recoloring memories with new meaning, recoloring them red.
"Mr. and Mrs. Honeycutt," Simon smiled, teeth as white as chalk. "So nice to meet you. My name is Simon Powell, and I'll be handling your account. I assure you I've got a lot of experience and will make sure your investments are secure. Follow me, please."
Hilo barely heard a word. The Wi-Fi router in his pocket might get installed, it might not. But Simon had to burn. His hands shook. Teresa, seduced by a dread. What if she was still involved with him? Even if she wasn't, just knowing the monster was anywhere near her enraged him. Poor fragile Darcy. Used and driven to madness by a dread to whom she was nothing but a mortal plaything, married so he could fit in at the firm. Righteous indignation coursed through Hilo's frame, and Cassandra had to apply another iron squeeze to get him to settle himself.
"Breathe," she whispered.
Simon's back was to them. Hilo sucked air, trying to wrestle his emotions. By the time they were sitting across an expensive mahogany desk from the Dread, Hilo had bridled the anger that begged to reach over, flare his strength, and stuff Simon into a desk drawer. The small one. "In this session," Simon began, "I just want to get a lay of the land, look at some of your financials and assets, and get an idea of the general direction you want to go. I understand you wish to protect your estate from your children, is that correct?"
"Yes," Cassandra confirmed. "I know that sounds cold, Mr. Powell, but..."
"There's no need to explain yourself, Mrs. Honeycutt. It's not at all unusual. It's your wealth, after all. Some parents like their children to receive an inheritance. Others prefer their children work for what they get to help them develop a strong character. Some parents don't like their kids. The important thing is this. You do what you see fit. If you want to give it to your children, great. You want to donate it to charity, great. You want to stack it all in a big pile and burn it? Well, I would advise against it, but great." He laughed at his own joke, and Hilo managed an anemic chuckle. "So, let's begin, shall we?" Hilo let Cassandra do all the talking. Forcing himself to breathe, he scanned the room for a way to get the Wi-Fi device installed. Simon's computer was hidden behind the desk. It was probably a terminal anyway. Time to reconnoiter. One reason they'd chosen to go as an elderly couple was so he could bumble about and act lost and cute and old. If he got caught where he shouldn't be, he could play the senior moment card.
"Is there a bathroom around here close?" Hilo said, interrupting Simon's overview of how interest accrued over time.
"Really, Chuck," Cassandra said. "You just went before we came."
"My prostate's the size of a grapefruit, woman," he retorted irritably.
Simon smiled patiently. "Go out the door and turn left. Second hall on the right. Can't miss it." Hilo shuffled out the door and into a hushed world of muted sounds and low voices. Gold-flecked wallpaper and marble floor trim accented gilded frames with landscape paintings. Carved wooden doors lined the hall, some shut, some open. His shoes sunk into the plush burgundy carpet, and he felt like a stranger in someone else's mansion. He peeked into offices for a stray computer, catching the occasional glow of Dread red. Hilo found the bathroom and kept going. He had been to the office before, but never paid attention to the layout. The server room was down a level, but he hadn't seen any stairs. As he crossed an intersection of two hallways, he saw her through a cracked door. His hand went to the wall for support. Teresa sat behind a monitor, chin in hand. Unfocused eyes, big and beautiful, stared listlessly at the screen. She had put on a little weight, her face fuller than he remembered. Worry lines creased her forehead, unhappiness roosting on her like a dark raven. She glanced up. Tracy's betrayed heart wanted to shrink away. Hilo, the angel, wanted to heal. The contest of desires crippled him as completely as spirit shock. Teresa regarded him softly, seeing only the old man.
"Can I help you, sir?"
she asked, voice dull. Hilo took a step into her office and opened his mouth to speak when a familiar warmth overcame him, just as it had in the grocery store during his bid to save Priscilla. Light suffused his being. The effulgence of rapture washed over him and overwhelming him into blissful insensibility.
"Sir? Sir?" Teresa said, voice panicked. "Are you okay?"
She knelt beside him on the floor, concerned face hovering over his. A strand of lustrous black hair floated above him, teasing him as it had so many times before. He lifted a hand to reach for it, a habit from a happier time, and then pulled it away. He blinked and lifted himself up on his elbow. Another bestowal was his, and he knew what to do.
"Help me up, young lady," he said. "Let me take a few minutes in that chair of yours."
She hauled him up and set him in the black swivel chair. He leaned back, breathing in and out heavily, like he was trying to catch his breath.
"Should I get a doctor or call an ambulance?"
she asked, standing in front of him, face uneasy.
He recognized her knee-length black skirt and white V-neck button-up shirt. She still looked great in it. The silver watch he had bought for her on their first anniversary dangled from her wrist.
"No, no, don't trouble yourself," he replied. "I just started chemo, and I get a little dizzy sometimes. It'll pass in a moment." "Did I hit my head or anything?"
"I don't think so," she said, leaning against the desk. "Are you sure you're all right? Can I get you some water or anything?"
Hilo smiled. "It's okay, really. If it came to a contest between your desk and my head, my wife would tell you my head would get the better of the battle."
He scanned the desk and nearly choked. A picture of him in his Marine uniform sat by the monitor, as did their wedding picture. Reverently, he took their wedding picture and examined it.
"This was your husband? You lost him, didn't you?"
She looked away.
"Yes."
"How did you know?" He set the picture back.
"I've been around a long time, dear. Seen a lot of pain." "He get killed overseas?"
"No," she answered, eyes watering. "He died because I was stupid."
Hilo fumbled for words. "We all make mistakes, honey."
It was a dumb thing to say. Her head shook.
"Not like this. It took him dying to pull me out of my own stupid, selfish world. I wronged him. I hurt him. And instead of me paying the price, he did. I miss him. I've tried so hard to be better, but I just... well, look at me just rambling on. I'm sorry."
She wiped her eyes, and Hilo struggled to keep his own clear. He had felt so hurt and so betrayed. The torching dreads had turned her into a torturing demon in his mind. But the woman before him wasn't that, Teresa. He had never considered that she would feel remorse or loss for what she had done, had never thought she would change. He reached out and took her hand. Calling forth his new gift, he suffused himself with divine power. The aura flowed from him and into her.
"You loved him. I can see that. He knew it, too. Whatever you did."
"I just can't forgive myself. I don't deserve it." Trace poured more Virtus into the flow, remembering what Dolorum's lessons had taught him.
"I know it's hard when you can't make things right. But you are a good person. You can live. You can be happy. You can make a difference, I promise you. Forgive yourself and find joy again."
The aura burned away the darkness in her countenance like a nightmare chased away by a new morning. His angelic persuasion found a ready place in her heart. She straightened, eyes brightening with each word. Dolorum was right. The subtler gifts could change the world, even if one at a time. Before him stood a captive pulled from the prison of despair. The difference was profound. It was a resurrection. He released her hand and patted it as she cried, other hand over her mouth.
"Now it's me rattling on,"
Hilo apologized with a geezerly grin.
"I do go on sometimes. I meant well."
She wiped her cheeks. She was like a person squinting into the sunshine after being pulled from a dark hole.
"Please don't apologize.
Who are you?" Hilo glanced at her computer screen, not sure what to say. The computer was logged in and sitting right in front of him.
"Just a foolish old man." "Could I trouble you for that drink of water after all?" he asked. "I am feeling a little on the dusty side."
"Of course," she replied, snapping back into focus. "Sorry, I just... well, I'll be a couple of minutes, okay? Which of our lawyers are with you?"
"Mr. Powell, no hurry," he said. "Take your time, sweetheart. Thank you for being so nice to me. Young kids today seem so rude all the time. but I can tell you are one of the good ones.
She smiled at him in the way he remembered. It awoke that attraction and longing in him as it had years before. She could be happy now. She could make someone happy now.
Thank you, she said. You know, you remind me of someone, but I just can't place it.
I've got one of those faces.
She rounded the corner and passed into the hall. He jumped up and swung the door shut to a sliver of a crack before diving back to the computer. The software and the accounts waited at his fingertips. Finding the accounts of Gutra and Hudgens proved unusually easy, thanks to the well-designed software. The Skolas had given them two shell companies to investigate, Edgerton Waterworks and Sandmine Concrete and Gravel. With a few keystrokes and a click, he had everything. A quick search found the common source of funding they shared. Quinn Maritime.
Hilo? Cassandra called to him from the hall, voice worn like she had just woke up.
Hilo's head snapped up. He closed out of the screens and pulled open the door. Blouse torn and hands shaky, Cassandra leaned against the wall just down from Simon's office.
Gotta go, she said. Now,